Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. And Sean, we're well in, almost a month into the season right now, and lots going on. And we're starting to question here which teams are sustainable and which are not, right?
Yeah, I think this is where the sample size becomes enough where you're no longer like, oh, this isn't sustainable, right? You're a month in, you're at least a dozen games in. You're looking at teams, not just win losses, goal differential, all kinds of different things, and you know, depth and all of those things. And you can kind of start to say, I think it's more so with teams that are that have traditionally been outside of the picture, or teams that walked into the season with a lot of questions, you could start to make conclusions. You know, you look at a team like Tampa Bay, and they started horribly, and now they've kind of come back. But you can even give them more room. Edmonton is another team. Florida, like, you know what their pedigree is. So you're like, well, I'm going to give them a little bit more room. But I think we're at the point now where teams where you have legitimate questions about, you can start to form answers.
Well, and that's where I want to go with the Anaheim Ducks, right? I mean, so let's start there. We're going to have Mike Zeisberger on, our colleague from NHL.com. He's going to be talking Leafs, Utah Mammoth. We're recording this Wednesday. The Utah Mammoth are in Toronto to play the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mammoth are 9-4 right now. They're one of those teams where you can start to draw a little bit of a conclusion that they look sustainable. So we'll have that coming up here shortly. But I wanted to start, Sean, with the Anaheim Ducks. Here's a team. You look at the standings this morning. They, by the way, just beat the Florida Panthers 7-3. Cutter Gauthier has a hat trick. He's got 10 goals right now. Here they are, the Anaheim Ducks, 8-3-1, 17 points, a 708 points percentage. They've won four games in a row. You look at the standings, they are atop right now the Pacific Division, tied in points percentage with the Vegas Golden Knights, but by tiebreaker, wherever you want to go, we're 12 games in. They're at first place. So you look at this team, and I'm saying the depth looks pretty good. The high-end talent looks pretty good. Leo Carlson's off to a great start. Cutter Gauthier is off to a great start. The goaltending is solid. We know the coaching pedigree is there with Joel Quenneville. Chris Kreider's got 7 goals in 8 games, missed a few with an illness. Jacob Trouba's playing well. They're balanced across the board. I think they might be for real, Sean.
Frank Vetrano, who was their go-to goal scorer for a couple of years in this rebuild, is on their fourth line. That's how good they are, right? And Gauthier struggled a little bit last year. You know, Carlson, they kind of load-managed him into this. You know, they took their time with him. They set him out for some games, not for some performance reason, but just to let his body acclimate to the grind of the NHL. But Cutter Gauthier has 10 goals, which is tied for the league lead. It's 10 goals in 12 games. You know who the last player that did that was?
Tell me.
Connor McDavid. 10 goals in 12 games before they turned 20.
Right. That's pretty good company, regardless, yeah, whatever the stat is. 10 goals in 12 games for anybody.
Now, I'm not saying that the Anaheim Ducks are going to stay atop the Pacific Division and are as good as the Vegas Golden Knights. And I'm not saying that Cutter Gauthier is starting a career in which he's going to mimic Connor McDavid for the rest of his career. But I don't think either one of these happenstances are flashes in the pan.
Right. And now, so let's take a look at it, right? So the Edmonton Oilers, who are on the outside of the playoff line right now, and again, we're talking on November 5th, but we're getting to that point where it matters more. And we're, like you said, the sample size and all that. I think we both, you said it, we both believe the Oilers get a longer runway. Remember, the last couple of years, they were a 500 team around U.S. Thanksgiving last year. The year before that, they were a 500 team to Christmas, and then they hit their stride, and we see what they were able to do. So maybe they're going through the same thing at the start. But there could, like, so I think they're fine. But the St. Louis Blues have been struggling. The Minnesota Wild have been inconsistent right now. These are teams that you're looking at. The Vancouver Canucks are inconsistent. These are teams we were looking at going into the season saying, all right, they look like they could be playoff teams. Maybe they should be playoff teams. We were not saying that about the Anaheim Ducks. We were saying that the Anaheim Ducks should be a better team. But with the Ducks playing as well as they've played, the balance they've showed, and I said that before, they have no forward right now playing more than Leo Carlson's 18 minutes and 23 seconds per game, right? So they're balancing it across the board, especially up front. To me, the Ducks, as long as they stay consistent, they can be that team. that jumps into a spot for a team that's struggling right now, like the Blues or the Wild or the Canucks, to find a level of consistency and become a team that we didn't see making the playoffs, make the playoffs. Why not Anaheim?
Exactly. Why not Anaheim? And, you know, I look at them and I'm like, they're a lot like Montreal from last year. So much young, enthusiastic, skilled talent all over the ice. But they have better veteran leadership. You look at it, on the blue line, you have Ratko Gudas. All the experience in the world brings a little bit of snarl and a little bit of sandpaper to that team. And Trouba, captain of the New York Rangers, during an era when they played regularly in the playoffs and handled a huge, huge market and a lot of controversy. Kreider, who is really determined. I talked to him at Olympic camp, and you know, he's like, yeah, this is a big year. I need to show some people, you know, that maybe I didn't need to be moved out of town. And Alex Killorn, who's won a cup. Those are guys, along with Joel Quenneville, who are going to teach these kids who have all the skill in the world how to apply their skill to their will and take off.
Yeah. And I like it. Take off, by the way. Ducks. I like it. Yeah.
They're going to fly together.
I see what you did there. That was very nice. I like this team. I like the growth that they showed last year under Greg Cronin. We've said this before, that Greg Cronin, while not there anymore, deserves credit for helping to build the foundation that Joel Quenneville is now building onto with his coaching. I think Cronin deserves credit for that. Leo Carlson looks like he's blossoming into a star center in this league. Cutter Gauthier is blossoming into a star forward in this league. They are a team that looks to me like they can be sustainable for a lot of reasons, like you just said. Their young guys are coming, but they have a lot of veteran leadership that can show the way. And that is something, like, they're not all learning together, right? They're guys who are there who have learned all these lessons in the past. So, interesting team, no doubt. I mean, one of those interesting teams. Heck, Sean, I mean, you look at the standings right now in the West. You got the Utah Mammoth in a position right now, the Seattle Kraken, and the Anaheim Ducks in positions right now above the playoff line. Again, it's November 5th. We stress, we know that. It's November 5th. But there is trending to be some turnover in the Western Conference.
I think there's going to be turnover in both conferences. I'm really excited about how this season looks and the new blood that's coming in, you know, and challenging to make the playoffs look a little different. I mean, we kind of walk into every year and we're like, oh, it's going to be the same 16 teams. Who knocks them out? And there's always a team or two that comes in and scrambles it up a little bit. I think there's going to be multiple teams this time that are going to scramble it up. And I think more so than usual, I think there's some veteran teams who are kind of sitting at that bottom third of the standings and are looking at some of these teams and saying, you know what? I don't think they're going away.
The turnover in the East, like I look at Anaheim, I look at Utah, and I see more sustainability. Seattle, I have a little bit more questions with. I don't know with the teams in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh that I see sustainability. I don't know. Like, a lot more to show me, if you will, in the East for that turnover.
I think so. So which one do you believe more in?
It's a really good question. Probably Philadelphia. A, they're not dealing with the injuries right now that Pittsburgh is dealing with. Pittsburgh's pretty banged up all of a sudden with Tristan Jarry and Justin Brazeau out. And Brazeau's been off to a good start. So probably Philadelphia also in terms of, and I think Dan Muse can be a heck of a coach in this league. He's off to a good start, but Rick Tocchet's got more of a coaching pedigree in this league to figure it out. I like what I'm seeing also from Trevor Zegras. Like, he looks like he's more of a determined player in Philadelphia. They're still got a lot of question marks there too. That's why I just don't know how sustainable they are either.
Michkov doesn't look very determined for,
not right
for
now.
Philly, and that's a problem. I believe more in the Pittsburgh Penguins because they have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. And Malkin's healthy, and he's playing like he's healthy, and he's dominating. And I think when you have world-class players like that, they can cover a whole host of sins. Now, as the year goes on with the Olympics for Sidney and the condensed schedule, maybe that changes. But I just think high-end talent, it's the Penguins. as long as it's applied. And I think Dan Muse has found a way to apply that high-end talent with some youthful excitement.
Yeah, high-end talent, no question about it. Pittsburgh has that. Depth, I would lean a little bit more towards the Flyers. Michkov's got to get it going, no question about it. All right, listen, before we get to Mike Zeisberger, I got a question in my weekly mailbag. It's up on NHL.com right now. I did talk, by the way, I did write about the Leafs in my weekly mailbag, actually, as well, and it actually led the mailbag with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The guy asked me, what's my prediction on Cale Makar's next contract? And last week, Sean, after we were done recording, is when Marty Natchez signed his 8-year, $92 million contract with the Colorado Avalanche. So my prediction, by the way, if you don't see it already on NHL.com, you should go read it, mailbag. I went with the eights. 8-year, $128 million contract. That's 8 seasons for Makar's jersey number 8. It's an average annual value number of $16 million. 8 is a factor of 16. It's also $8 million less than Kaprizov got on his 8-year, $136 million contract. So I'm going on the eights for Makar, but I think, you know, we can all agree that that's the next big one. And whereas McDavid took that hometown discount to win, Makar's won. The Avalanche have won. Makar's going to get paid. The Avalanche know it. That's the next big one. So what do you think? 8 years, $128 million for Cale Makar.
I'm going lower. This is like the Jumbotron game.
Ruining the eights.
Where, yes, I'm ruining the eights. I just think he knows he can win again there. He's got it really good. He's one of the faces of the franchise. You know, he's got MacKinnon. But they're going to need stuff to stay competitive. And I think he looks at it and says, you know, I'm going to take a little bit less. I think that Kaprizov contract is just a complete outlier. Nobody else is going to get that money because nobody else was in the position that Kaprizov was in.
I agree with that. And right now, nobody else was in that position. He's the clear superstar, the number one player on that team, the player that they have to sign. He knew he had him. He had to get. They had to do whatever they could to sign him, whatever it took. Yes, because in Colorado you have MacKinnon, right? I mean, you know, in Edmonton you got McDavid and Draisaitl. In Vegas you've got Eichel, but you got Stone. And, I mean, a number of players, obviously, right? In Vegas, I get that, but I think we're gonna, like, this is part of a larger conversation that we'll, you know, that we're gonna be having over the course of the next several years. Where the salary cap is going will indicate where these contracts are going. Connor McDavid could have done it, but he chose not to. Cale Makar, I don't know the decision he's going to make, but he's the next one that can. And if he does, it's going to go in that direction of the Kaprizov contract because of the nature of where the cap is going to. And we're going to be building off the percentage of the cap more less so than what the, you know, being blown away by the average annual value of the number.
The fair argument to have is percentage of the cap, yep, right? Because the numbers are going to get more and more. They're going to grow more and more because the cap is growing right now more and more. So you're going to look at some numbers and you're going to be like, oh boy, like that's a big number. And you try and compare it to players that were signed during a stagnant cap, right? You look at like a Jack Hughes and you're like, well, those numbers for the players they are, they don't match.
Right.
I just look at, like, so many hockey players, I think, are a creature of habit, and they want to stay, they want to be comfortable, and they want to stay where they are. You know, you look at some players that have moved and haven't really found greener pastures. We're going to talk about one of them a little later in Steven Stamkos with the Nashville Predators after he left Tampa. And you know, I also think the moves that Colorado made in the lead-up to this, you know, walking away from players reverberates around that locker room, right? Like, I don't know that. Look, Colorado's going to give him the fairest deal they can. They're going to walk in and they're basically going to be like, you pick a number and we'll negotiate from that number. I think that's what you have to do with a star player like that. But they moved on from a cornerstone player because they didn't like the number they were looking at.
But they also had to move on from that cornerstone player, and you're talking about Mikko Rantanen, who, by the way, got $12 million a year from Dallas, and Marty Natchez got 11.5, right? So you look at, I know everybody was looking at it, and we're going, well, if you can give Marty Natchez 11.5, like, why'd you have to trade Mikko Rantanen? Why couldn't you just give him that?
That's not a $12 million contract he signed. Dallas is in a no-tax state.
Different. You're right. It's different. So maybe it goes up a little bit. Regardless, the numbers are close, at least. We can at least agree that the numbers are close. You had to bring Gabriel Landeskog back this season. That's $7 million coming off LTIR that you had to account for on your cap. They had to, if they were going to re-sign Mikko Rantanen, the contract was starting this season. To me, it was a lot about this particular season because of when Rantanen's new deal was coming up and when Landeskog was coming off LTIR, and they had to account for that figure. Now, going forward, the cap's going up. They have a really good player in Marty Natchez. I would prefer to have Mikko Rantanen. That's not a knock on Marty Natchez. I would prefer to have Mikko Rantanen. The cap situation would have been very difficult to navigate this particular season for a team that, for all intents and purposes, is Stanley Cup or bust. Makar's contract is certainly one that's everybody's going to be looking at. And also, by the way, he has a couple of months from July 1st through the middle of September to sign an 8-year deal before the new CBA kicks in. It becomes only a 7-year deal available to him. So that's also something to watch. But we talked to Mike Zeisberger. We talked about the Toronto Maple Leafs. We talked about the Utah Mammoth. You teased the Steven Stamkos discussion. We'll continue that on the other side. Here is our interview with our colleague from NHL.com, Mike Zeisberger. Zeis, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm doing great. It's hockey season. Hockey season, usually in a lot of the smaller markets, hockey season starts when football ends. In Toronto, it started on Sunday after the Blue Jay season ended. It probably goes back to 1993 since I've seen that happen in the city.
I got to read this text that both of us got from Zeis last night, Tuesday night. We're recording this Wednesday morning.
Uh-oh.
It still befuddles me how some in this market figured they'd be better without a 102-point scorer who was a finalist for the Selke 2 years ago. At the risk of you taking over the entire show for the next 30 minutes to explain this, explain your thinking on the Toronto Maple Leafs without Mitch Marner.
My thinking was that there, and look, we're not going to get into right now in this little answer about whether they could have kept him or not. That's another thing. But there were people that thought, well, they freed up money. So they brought in Nicholas Waugh and they brought in Dakota Joshua, players of that ilk. So there's more depth. Well, that's great. But you can have all the depth you want. That doesn't replace the scoring. It doesn't replace the fact that this kid was one of the better defenders among forwards in the National Hockey League. And what you're really seeing right now on the power play, guys, Marner was a guy when you're trying to make a zone entry on the power play, and a lot of teams do this now where they do a back pass from the neutral zone into the guy with speed coming from his own blue line. That's how you enter the offensive zone. He was the guy that was kind of the puck carrier, the playmaker, the guy that made those zone entries. And their power play without him, they're having a hard time just getting into the other team's end. So you can debate all you want about whether they could have kept him, whether they couldn't keep him. But the bottom line is they are not a better team without Mitch Marner. And I don't care how many third or fourth liner guys, no offense to the guys they brought in. Michelli is another guy who's going to be playing his former team Utah tonight. But those guys, even when you put them all together, do not add up to a Mitch Marner.
The Maple Leafs knew that. They didn't address it in any way. Did you expect it to be better than it is? I mean, look, we all know you're not going to replace Marner, but they put these pieces together and they said, hey, look, here's the new Maple Leafs and we're not going to miss a beat. People believed that to a degree that it was going to be a new way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to be a four-line team. And now it seems like they're almost on a daily basis, partially because of injuries, having open tryouts for top six forwards.
Myself, personally, I'm not surprised. This is what I thought it would be. And I thought there would be growing pains and struggles to that end. GM Brad Treliving has said he's looking for a top six forward. But as we all know, you know, there weren't many of those either on the open market, other than Mitch Marner, ironically, or on the trade market right now. And it's, to me, it's only going to get more difficult to try to find top six forwards for two reasons. Number one, the parity, and I know we're only in the season for 1 week, or sorry, 1 month, is the fact that so many teams still are so close to each other. Like the other day, I was looking at the standings, and you know, from 18 points to 14 points in the Eastern Conference, you had all but one or two teams that were bunched in together. So there's not going to be, I just don't see that there's going to be a lot of those top six forwards available. And number two, a lot of the guys that this coming summer were going to be out there, teams are signing their own projected free agents. So it's difficult to fill that slot. My only issue was there was a narrative in the city, not necessarily put out by the team, although there was a little bit of PR done, that, well, we can be as good or almost as good because we have this depth. And I was never buying it. And you know, your point about tryouts is very, very accurate. I mean, because they're bringing in guys, you know, they've got, for example, there's all this stuff that they want it, you know, they're trying to trade Nick Robertson. Well, A, there has to be a market for somebody. And B, right now, he's one of the only guys not named Nylander, McMahon, Tavares, Matthews, that has the natural ability to score. So, you know what? I think this is going to be a team that's in flux up front, not just because of the injuries, but because, hey, you know what? Look at Austin Matthews has probably had, I think I counted it up the other day, seven different wingers this year. That's a lot different from the old days where, you know, Batman and Robin, Matthews and Marner. So, like I said, it is an evolving story.
As you were talking, you know, it came to mind, I was reading a little bit about this particular player that I'm going to bring up. It's a question to me of when you look at a top six role that they need to fill, do they need to fill it with a player who resembles Mitch Marner and the skills that he has, or do they fill it with just a guy who is a top six forward who can score? Because there's one in Nashville who scored with 0.3 seconds left on the clock Tuesday night, who's not generating shots and not generating offense, and he's from Toronto, and his name is Steven Stamkos, and he probably can be had, depending on the trade, with the Predators eating a little bit of that salary. So the question is, do they need just a guy who can score, or do they need a guy who can fill the role that Marner filled to get the best out of the other guys?
Here's what I would say about that. If you were to get a Steven Stamkos, to me, the best way to utilize that, you put Nylander with Matthews, okay? Because there's your point about the playmaker to the shooter. And then you put Stamkos with Tavares. And, you know, now you're reuniting guys that played together when they were 11 years old on the Ontario Blues summer team. You know, is Tavares that? I mean, in no way is Tavares the playmaker that Marner is, but he still is, very, very successful, as you were, in the offensive zone. And I think that would be good because your top two lines there then would have bona fide shooters, Matthews on the first line, Stamkos on the second line, and, you know, you can let Nylander and Tavares do their thing. So that is a very, very intriguing concept that you throw out there. And the interesting thing is, what we forget is that when Stamkos was a pending free agent going into to be a UFA in 2015, remember they had that 1 week where you could talk to players before free agency started. They brought him up to Toronto, and not only did he have a meeting with the mayor, he had a meeting with the president of Canadian Tire, yeah. Saying, come on, play with us. And at the time he said he looked at the roster, there was no Matthews, Marner, and I think Nylander. I'm not sure if he had started playing, but that was near the beginning of his career. He looked and said, I got a better chance to win in Tampa Bay. Now he might look at it and say, you know what? That's a different team. Maybe at this point in my career, that would be a good fit.
I want to move on to the opponent tonight in
Mm-hmm.
Utah. You talked to Bill Armstrong yesterday. It's time to kind of give him a little bit of props. It was kind of like a running joke for a few years. Oh, it's coming, it's coming. You know, all the way back to Arizona, we're building these assets. We have these pieces in the pipeline, and if you just give it time, it'll come, it'll arrive. It's arrived. And Bill, look, some of it's you finish last or in the bottom five, you get good draft picks, and if you hit on those, you're golden. But he's also been an aggressive trader, you know, UFAs, everything. Like he kind of realized that the window was open, or opening, and you know, imported some players that are certainly helping. And now they arrive in Toronto, and they're pretty close to a wagon at this point.
9-4-0 coming into Toronto, and you know what? I'm really excited to watch them live. When I look at this team, you know, Sean, you mentioned what Bill Armstrong has done, bringing in a short Sergachev to be that kind of alpha on the back end, making the trade for Peterka, another young player that can score. But Dylan Gunter, Logan Cooley, both of those guys, you know, locked up to long-term contracts. As a 21 and 22-year-old, and then Clayton Keller, who may be the best player in the National Hockey League that nobody talks about at 27, and somebody that I've been pushing hard—not that anybody ever listens to me—but to make the U.S. Olympic team. I mean, this is Auston Matthews' buddy, and they played together before. Why not do that at the Olympics? But not to get ahead of ourselves, but. Just to see the group that they put together. They're young, they're fast, they're exciting. You know, they're getting good goaltending from the Flying V. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name because I will butcher that. You guys can jump in when you want. But
Vemelka.
yes. But you know, they had a franchise high 7-game winning streak already. I just like so many things about this team. And I really do think when you talk to some of the players and you talk to Bill Armstrong, the fact that Salt Lake City has embraced these guys so much, you know, talking to a couple of their players, it's like, you know, our home games are as rabid as if you go to some places that have had teams for 40 or 50 years. So I think they've embraced it. I think they like the fact that, hey, everybody wants to be cared about, right? And they know that those people really care about that team. There's so many things to like about this franchise, and they're one of my favorite ascending teams in the National Hockey League right now.
They went through it last year, right? Like this isn't a team that's skipping a step, right? I mean that's you could argue like the Montreal Canadiens skipped a step, right? Last year, you know that they're coming out of the Four Nations, they were you know middling going in, coming out, boom, they just hit it and they went, and now they didn't need that step that Utah went through last year, where they, you know, they went through some ups and downs and they. You know, they had a strong finish, but they look back and they can see where it went wrong and they missed the playoffs by 7 points. And it didn't help that the St. Louis Blues, you know, caught fire as well. To me, that helps Utah. Do you agree with that? Like that they went through that step last year makes what they're doing now seem like it's more sustainable.
Well, big time. And if you look at the standings, okay, so they finished with 89 points. 89 points in the Eastern Conference would have been just 2 points out of the playoff spot, which the aforementioned Montreal Canadiens ended up getting. So, you know, they were on the cusp. They played well. Look it, I mean, you're in the Central Division, which I think easily is the toughest division in the National Hockey League. But you know, their record was 38, 31, and 13. Now that's respectable. I mean, people are gonna look and say, well, the 13 means that you know, you lost more games than you won. And I understand that thinking, but that's the modern day way of doing the standings. But I really do feel that you know, they're ready to take the next step. And look, I mean, getting out of the gates, especially in that conference, I mean, if you look at the fact, like, look at the way the St. Louis Blues have started. I mean, they're gonna have to go like another run like they did last year. Or, I mean, everybody goes back to 2019 and says about the Blues, you know, they were in last place at you know, at Christmas. and they came back to win the cup. Okay. How many times have we seen that? So there are, it is a tough division, but I think you get tougher when you're in it with competition like that. And I still think that, compared to some of the teams, Minnesota's treading water a bit. I do think there's a big opportunity for Utah here.
Size quickly before we let you go. It's a big weekend in hockey, Hall of Fame weekend. Crushed, I'm not going to be there. But you will be there along with several other NHL.comers. And we're running our previews, our profiles of the inductees right now, along with testimonials from people that were key in their career. And I specifically assigned you Joe Thornton because you've basically covered his whole career. And I'm wondering if you can just quickly summarize, what it means for Joe to be in the Hall of Fame.
I'll do this, as you said, very quickly. The people that you talk to about Joe Thornton, who played with him, who coached him, everybody says the th same thing. He's a larger than life entity. And when you're around him, you understand that. He lights up a room, he makes people laugh. And in his hometown of St. Thomas, which is about an hour and a half outside of Toronto, there's a huge statue of Jumbo the Elephant, which in the late 1800s, Barnum and Bailey Circus was in St. Thomas doing a show. And when they were leading Jumbo the Elephant, a 13-foot-high elephant, back to his boxcar, it got hit by a freight train. It was big news back then. They built a statue of Jumbo the Elephant. Jumbo Thornton grew up 2 miles from Jumbo the Elephant. One larger than life figure growing up in the shadow of another larger than life figure. And I guess the best thing that Patrick Marleau, his one of his best friends and longtime teammates, told me about Joe Thornton: when you're around him, everything in life seems better and funnier. And I don't think I could say it any better than that.
Size, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the weekend.
Awesome seeing you guys.
Great stuff there with our colleague Mike Zeisberger on the Leafs, the Mammoth, and Joe Thornton. Jumbo is going to be going into the Hall of Fame this weekend. Hall of Fame inductions Monday, actually. It's Hall of Fame weekend coming up. Jennifer Botterill, Zdeno Chara, Brianna Decker, Duncan Keith, Alexander Mogilny, Jack Parker, Danielle Sauvageau, and Joe Thornton all going into the Hockey Hall of Fame this weekend in Toronto. It's always a great weekend. Like you, Sean, I'm not thrilled I'm not there, but I mean, listen, you and I have covered a bunch of these already. This is going to be a very busy one with the number of people going into the Hall of Fame. So it's good. It's a great weekend.
And two Toronto games that weekend. Usually there's only one. There's two. So I don't believe there's an alumni game. It's a little bit of a different feel to the Hall of Fame this week, but it's always magical. That weekend in Toronto, all of the hockey royalties there, and it should be a fantastic weekend. And the ceremony, the speeches always blow me away. Like, I'm a sucker for those things. So Monday I will be tuned in probably with a Kleenex or two somewhere handy.
Yeah, they're good stuff. You got to tune in for it Monday nights. So anyway, listen, I teased it before we got to Zeiss. We talked about it with Zeiss, Steven Stamkos. It's a really interesting conversation, I think, here, Sean. It hasn't worked in Nashville. The numbers show you. He has now played, I think it's 97 games with the Nashville Predators, and he has 56 points. He has 29 goals and 27 assists. He's a minus 41. Beyond that, in his 97 games with the Nashville Predators, he has just a shade over 200 shots on goal. I think the exact number is 206 in 97 games. His last 3 years in Tampa, he was averaging about 250 shots on goal per game. It is not there. He had 174 last year. It just doesn't seem to be working for Stamkos. And then you look at it and you say, okay, can there be a trading partner with him? Can he get a fresh start? We talked about Toronto with Zeiss. I think it's something that the Predators and Stamkos should be exploring at this point.
I think it's something that's explored at some point. I don't know if we're quite there yet. You look at his shooting percentage this year. He's got one goal, right?
Two. He scored with 0.3 seconds
right.
left to go.
Yeah, that's right. He scored last night. But it's historically low. Like, so is this year a slump? Look, the greatest goal scorer in the history of hockey has 2 goals this year. Sometimes it happens, right? That's Alex Ovechkin. He's got 2 goals this year. We thought we were going to be done with 900 3 weeks ago. If they continue and Nashville continues to kind of be in your favorite place, which is the mushy middle, and then you get closer, Zai's talked about it. With all the free agent signings that happened last year, there's not a ton of rentals. And if you're desperate, if you think it's your year and you need one piece to get over, one veteran piece, you start looking at that. And then the prices are going to go higher. Especially with him having term left on his deal, I think you get a better price after the new year than you do now.
Possibly. I think you also have to look from a Stamkos perspective, too. Where would it benefit him? You remember, he was getting all those shots and getting set up by everything by one of the greatest playmakers of all time, Nikita Kucherov, right? And he doesn't have that. The offensive situation in Nashville does not include a player of Nikita Kucherov's ilk. It's just not there. Where are those players of teams that might be able to absorb that contract that want to look to win right now, even taking on a 35-year-old Steven Stamkos, that need the goal scoring? Toronto, we talked about, is one of them. Zai's brought up William Nylander. I think the New York Rangers are one of them. New York Rangers can't score, right? I mean, they've 4 times they've been shut out at home, 1 time held to 1 goal. They got 5 goals at home against San Jose, and they lost that game in overtime. They have Artemi Panarin. We're looking at a team that wants to take that step and be back into the playoffs. The Red Wings are another one, I think, with some of the playmakers they have. Patrick Kane, obviously, when healthy. And you're not looking at a long window here with Steven Stamkos. You're looking at a shorter period with a 35-year-old player. He's got 2 years plus left on his deal, and you're trying to win with that, right? Panarin with the Rangers is a pending UFA, so it's a little bit different there. But I think you have to look at those teams, too, that could be interested in making such a trade. And they got to have the cap space to make it work. These trades take a while. So you're probably right in looking after the new year anyway.
You know what? I'm kind of interested to see how Nashville comes back. They're going to Europe next week. They're playing in the Global Series against Pittsburgh, a team we talked about a little bit. And I think it's going to be hugely beneficial to the Penguins with all the young players they have to have that week to go away and kind of bond. Emily Benjamin's doing a story on traditionally what that has done for teams. And Steven Stamkos knows. He went over with the Lightning, and they came back, and they won the Cup, right? Yep. That's happened numerous times in Europe. I think out of all the times we went, 7 Cup winners have gone over to Europe and come back and won the Cup that year. I'm not saying either one of these teams are going to do that, but I am saying that it can help change your team, especially in a year with a condensed schedule where you don't really have the opportunity to practice and you don't have the opportunity to bond as much. You know, even when you're on the road, it's game, off day, game, go home. So this is an opportunity for a week to kind of gel your team and figure out what's happening. And so, you know, I'd be kind of interested in seeing when they come back, what they look like, say, 2 weeks from then, and then you can start making some decisions.
Yeah, there's still time. There's still plenty of time with that. One more team that I wanted to get to here, Sean, before we say goodbye for this week, the Boston Bruins. Again, I got asked a question about the Bruins in my mailbag as well. I'm going to pose it to you. Like, where are you right now with the Bruins? Who are the Boston Bruins?
Dude, your mailbag is robust. Does it hurt your back to carry it?
Nah, no, I'm all right. I'm strong.
Well, it's all that workout you do.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Where am I with the Bruins? I'm completely lost. I don't know where I am with the Bruins. I thought that they would be decent because they're the Bruins and they have that culture, and I just wanted to write last year off as an aberration. And then they come out and they start winning, and you're like, oh, look, the Boston Bruins. Like, here's the Bruins that you remember. And then they go in the tank, and now they've come out of the tank with stringing together 5 wins in a row now. They beat the Islanders last night 4-3. I believe in that game they came back 3 times from a deficit. Is that who the Bruins are? I have serious questions about their scoring depth. But you look like Morgan Geekie might be the most underrated goal scorer in the league. He had 37 last year. He's got 9 and 12 games this year. He's one off the league lead. You know, he's producing at a crazy rate. And, you know, I think if I asked you to name 15 great goal scorers in this league and you asked 20 people, none of them would name Morgan Geeky.
I don't know if you have, you read a lot of things, you see everything that goes on NHL.com. By the way, at the end of my answer on the Boston Bruins, I used the line, they're in the mushy middle. And I did it just for you, Sean. I did it just for you. They're caught in between. I think they're just caught in between. They're not good enough to be sustainable as a playoff team. They don't have the scoring depth. They don't have the center depth, and they don't have the scoring depth. They don't have the speed, but they're not bad enough to where you're looking at Gavin McKenna either, right? Like where they're in that situation for that. So you're going to be pushing all year to be in the playoffs, but I don't think they get there because I don't think they're strong enough to get there. So where are they? Caught in between or the mushy middle. That's where the Boston Bruins are right now.
And even if somehow they get there, they're not built for a long run in the playoffs. Right?
No.
They're going to get there on the back of Jeremy Swayman, but everybody has a good goalie when you get to the playoffs. That's why you're in the playoffs. And they don't match up well with any of the other any of the top six teams in the East.
It's hard to clearly identify what their identity is right now. Maybe that becomes more defined over the course of this season and they prove us wrong, right? That we've seen it happen before. It wouldn't be the first time. But right now, I think they're just a team caught in between, and it's really not a place you want to be. We are at the place we never want to be, the end.
Dan, as always, it's a pleasure. We'll see you next week.
Yes, we will. Enjoy Hall of Fame weekend, and enjoy the hockey.